All right, good morning, folks, and welcome to the April 2024 ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer Report. This monthly conversation is intended to help you stay on top of global fertilizer prices and buy in bulk at the most opportune times. I'm your host, Luke Halter. Today, we're going to switch it up a little bit. I know there's some previous commitments, so we're going to start first with Chris Lawson, lead fertilizer analyst with CRU.
Thanks, Luke. Thanks, ADM team, for having me on again. And hello, everyone on the call. Hope you're having a great morning. So on the international fertilizer front, there's been a decent amount of market movement since we last spoke around a month ago. We've started to see urea prices tank, which was kind of what we expected to happen. We'd expected them to peak around mid-April, and that kind of downfall in prices was really exacerbated by some market moves around kind of early last week, late the week before, with India. They are big international buyers of urea, and they have big official tenders. They did one of their first tenders for the year. They kind of accepted 700,000 tons for that, but then only wrote acceptances for 350,000 tons roughly. So a lot of additional tons onto the market kind of brought prices down into a bit of free fall last week. The market's starting to stabilize somewhat since that. And I would say that a big part of that is obviously the concerns around the Middle East and its importance for overall kind of nitrogen fertilizer supply, and then the obvious kind of second order impacts on oil and gas prices as well. We have seen gas prices starting to increase over the last week or so as a result of these increased geopolitical tensions. Just to touch on the Middle East for a moment, we really cannot understate how important this region is for global fertilizer supply. Just to rattle off some numbers here, when thinking about total urea exports, so just the traded market, the Middle East plus Egypt is 46% of that market. Sulfur, which is a key raw material in phosphate production, is 48%, and even 44% of phosphate rock comes from the Middle East and Egypt, again, on a kind of traded market basis. So this is not an insignificant region by any means when it comes to fertilizers, and that's, I think, fairly obvious to everyone. So that's really one to be watching out for over the coming weeks and months. If we do see any escalation here, if we see some major blockages in shipping lanes or any kind of attacks on kind of key industrial facilities, then there's some fairly drastic implications there. We're not necessarily anticipating any of that to happen, but it's really worth highlighting that risk. Touching more specifically on Iran as well, and I know that there's talk of sanctions ramping up on Iran following these attacks over the weekend. I'm not going to speculate whether those sanctions will be effective or not, particularly given how able the different Iranian businesses have become at evading various different sanctions. But anyway, just to give you a bit of numbers and context to their importance of the fertilizer market, when it comes to urea, they are around 8% of global trade. And they're doing that despite some of those various different financial sanctions that are placed upon them at the moment. So they are an important supplier to the international market, sending a lot into Latin America, into Turkey, into Africa. So they're not supplying directly into the US, obviously. But again, very important in terms of the global supply and demand dynamic. So again, I think that's really a big talking point at the moment. Speaking with our customers on is the risk that surrounds the Middle East right now. Just to touch on some of the other fertilizers as well. Phosphate, last time we spoke, we kind of discussed the big decoupling that we've seen in phosphate pricing compared to nitrogen and potash. We have finally started to see those phosphate prices be lower and kind of starting to correct course a little bit and come down around those kind of nitrogen and potash levels. That's kind of really started to set in over the last couple of weeks. A big reason for that is China returning to the export market and also a bit of increased availability from other key suppliers such as Morocco. So we should see a continuation of those declining phosphate prices over the coming months in our view. And potash, not too much of a change on that front, I would say. It's still relatively quiet and relatively uneventful. Still a decent amount of supply out there on potash markets. The big thing that we're watching out for at the moment is when China might sign its annual contract. They may be in a little more hurry to do that now, just again, based on some of the different geopolitical events. And to give you some context on the importance of the Middle East for overall potash supply, they are 11%. So that's the product that's coming out of Israel and Jordan. They're 11% of the global traded market for potash. So again, not insignificant by any means. So again, just to really quickly summarize, as kind of we had anticipated, fertilizer prices have started to move lower on the nitrogen and phosphates front. Nitrogen, we expect, should bump up in a couple of months, but phosphate should be a relatively steady and long-lived decline. Potash will remain relatively uneventful, we believe. But again, the big underlying risk here is the Middle East. So that's the one to be watching out for when considering the risk around your fertilizer procurement.
Thank you, Chris. That's certainly what we've been seeing here on our side. So next, we're going to kick it over to Daniel Overberg, Director of Customer Risk with ADM, for a grain update. Daniel?
All right. Thanks, Lip. Good morning. Thanks for having me back. I was on here last month. And as I look back, I think the last call was March 20th. December corn was around 470 that day. This morning, we're at 467. No beans, a little bit more exciting. I guess depends on what vantage point you're looking at those at. We're around, I think, 1180. We're at 1155 this morning. But I think the theme here is that we're in a sideways trend, right? You know, this thought process of growing carryouts, growing production versus good demand, but static, generally static demand, you know, certainly has prices continue to be on the defensive. The theme continues to be that the uncertainty over demand is greater than the uncertainty over supply. So let's break it down commodity by commodity here. Let's start with corn. You know, if we looked at the end of March, we had the prospective plantings and the March 1 stocks report. You know, I would say the stocks number was a little bit of a surprise. I think the estimates were on the, you know, kind of the low end, but we came even below the lowest estimate with stocks in all positions on March 1. You know, certainly that lends towards a larger feeding number. I can't quite connect the dots on that myself. If you start to think about a cattle herd that's at an 80-year low, a mild winter, and as I talked to our co-products desk, and just the weak fiber demand they've seen, to say that we have a higher feeding number, it's tough. But big crops tend to get bigger, and then obviously you're gonna see a larger disappearance as well. We also then saw with the April WASD, the USDA take ethanol run rates higher, which is justified. Margin structure continues to be not spectacular, but good enough to lend support to higher run rates, and ethanol exports continue to be robust. But I think the biggest thing on this March 1 stocks is just the on-farm versus off-farm stocks. So we've seen an increase of 24% on-farm stocks versus prior year. Again, it's not any surprise. It's not anything we don't already know or the trade hasn't digested. But I think just to see it on paper continues just to, have the market lacking catalysts for any real rally, because there's plenty of hedge pressure above the market. You know, whether it's the U.S. producer or the South American producer, there's plenty of grain to be sold at a price point above. For what we know today, exports are still good. USDA has us at 2.1 billion bushels. They left that unchanged on the March WASD, justified. We're going to start to see the seasonal decline now. Maybe a little bit of spot business picking up here with worries over Argentina production on disease pressure. I'll get into that here in a second. Could you see revisions higher later? Yeah, you can. The USC has a couple months until the marketing year is over to make those adjustments, though, and the 2.1 billion numbers, pretty good. And seasonally, right, we decline now, so you've got to continue to see some huge export inspections as we start to get into the seasonal decline for U.S. exports. Let's look at RG for a little bit. So there's been plenty of news wires out over the disease pressure in Argentina. My understanding, though, so it's spiroplasma, or corn stunt disease. Primarily, it's in the north or the north central regions. I was on a call yesterday. I think that the north region alone produces around I think 15 to 16 million metric tons. So if we're just going to talk about that disease as isolated to the north, when we're talking about a, you know, 5 to 6 million metric ton decrease, that seems pretty large to me. You know, when you just think about it logically, but it's hard to say, like, how far south is it going into that north central area. So it's certainly got to be monitored. It certainly has, you know, the trade's attention, but there's just not enough supply uncertainty there to, again, overrule the demand uncertainty as we think about, you know, demand growth going forward versus this large production base. And I think the biggest thing that has people worried is China. We've seen some corn cancellations here over the last couple of weeks. Plenty of news wires out with China trying to support domestic prices as domestic corn prices have plummeted here as of late, you know, to try to entice the Chinese grower to grow more corn, to try to get their corn price back higher to limit the amount of imports coming in. I would say there is risk over that 23 million metric ton of corn exports coming or corn imports coming into China before it's all said and done. Look for this marketing year. But we've just got to keep tabs on that. So back to Argentina quick, though. The USDA is at around 55 million metric tons. I think most private analysts are, and even the Brazilian agents or the Argentina agencies are coming into that 48 to 50 million metric tons. We've just got to see. I think, I don't know, you get south of 48, I think that's becoming pretty drastic. It's the later planted stuff that seems to be the most affected. Typically, the earliest news out of these type issues are the most drastic, and then we start to march production numbers back higher from there. Shifting to beans here, you know, it's always and forever China. Right now, the USDA has the Chinese import for beans at 105 million metric tons. That would be record large. I think the China numbers that most people are picking up on is they're thinking 97 to 98 million metric tons. So that spreads roughly 200 million bushels. It's a big deal to the market. That's the concern the market has here on beans, is what is going to be this export campaign for the U.S. as we get into the later quarters of 2024, you know, when we should have peak export season for the U.S. to China. And their growth story is a bit of a mixed bag. We saw GDP data yesterday, a little bit better than expected, 5.3% growth versus the anticipated 5.2%. But their retail sales and their industrial indicators are saying maybe a slowdown versus expectations. So I think generally China's a mixed bag and probably more negative than positive. And you start to look at the feed numbers, Chinese pork production's lower. Their herd down 5% year on year, their salaries down 7% year on year. So all those clearly are not demand positive as we look forward here towards the end of 2024. So now let's shift to wheat. I think it's funny, you know, we continue to see a balance sheet globally that, you know, is slowly declining. Russia certainly has been the wet blanket over the market with cheap wheat offered globally. Overall, weather-wise, March, central Russia was very dry. They've had ample soil moisture. Overall, things remain stable. Rains are forecasted, but these rains have to be realized. So the wheat S&D does get a little bit more constructive if we start to talk about production woes in Russia. But, you know, that's no different than any other year. If we assume normal, the wheat balance sheet stays comfortable, probably even grows a little bit. Western and central Ukraine have had recent rains. The east and part of the south are a little bit dry. But the planting progress to date has been pretty favorable. So I think, you know, mainly on wheat here, you know, kind of the stepchild for most. If you have production issues out of Russia, it certainly starts to get a little interesting, especially when you start to think like they've been the cheap offer, you know, the provider to the world here. And you start to think about geopolitical issues, then production woes, you see a little bit of excitement out of the market, but we just got to get a little bit more information before we can really, really trade that story if there is a story. Price projections on corn and beans. I'm not going to touch wheat. I'm no wheat expert by any means. Corn, we're a sideways market. We're sitting near support 460 to 465 in December corn. Resistance is at 485. I still maintain on corn the market can't send them a signal as we start to plant, to take beast corn up around 5 to plant 91, 92 million acres of corn. I think that that's why we continue to see corn maybe disappoint in the face of these supply-side woes out of Argentina here as of late. Beans, we failed at pretty major monthly, weekly, daily resistance up there around that 12 to 1220 area. Now we're sitting down here in this 1150, 1160 area. You know, near-term resistance is this 1165, 1170. The charts don't look great. If we break down here, we probably go try to see if we can take out that swing low down around 1125 on November beans. Planting progress generally, I think, is in line. I would say, I don't want to get backyard syndrome, but locally in central Illinois, it feels like there's been quite a bit of crop that has gone in this week. We've missed some rains. It's been pretty favorable. You know, there are some pretty decent storms that whipped through Iowa and west central Illinois last night. But generally, it feels like some pretty good progress has been made in the central Illinois area. I can't comment to other regions. I haven't made that been around the horn with our other account managers yet this week to see what kind of progress has been made. So, Luke, that is what I have for the grain market update.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Yep.
So next, we're going to shift gears back to domestic fertilizer here, and we're going to call on Nick Peterson, our ADM phosphate trader. Nick.
Thanks, Luke. It really is an interesting market here. We look at the last 30 days. We had a pretty dramatic short squeeze in NOLA first half of March on DAP that really put some upside pressure here into that market. And for the most part, I think the expectation was that would be short-lived. If you look at prices over the last 30 days on phosphates across the board, we've seen some mild backwardation somewhere 20, 25 bucks at the high end. And realistically, what we're looking at now is it's all about logistics. Is the product there? Is it available? And how quickly can you get it in and out of the terminal? So for the most part, as we're looking at the balance of April and into first half May, I would expect very little to mild backwardation. I don't think that there's going to be a substantial rally by any stretch of the imagination. I think anyone who's bought just in time will save a few bucks. But for the most part, the recommendation in March was, hey, try to lock in what you can. Maybe there would be some cheaper values from a cost-plus standpoint available within the market. A lot of choppiness on pricing. But as we look forward in a post-spring world, to Chris's point, we are seeing pretty substantial backwardation globally. India's off $50 here in about a month. Brazil, oddly enough, looking at India DAP versus Brazilian MAP, Brazil's actually firmed up a little bit here on the physical side in April and May. Not much, but up $5. And what that's done is we look forward to really summer fill is the U.S. market is pricing in parity to Brazil with the assumption that there will be some additional supply optionality available as we look at summer fill. The overarching thesis really being that the CBD case is still uncertain, and the market is pricing in some sort of return by either the Russians or the Moroccans here in early Q3. So the recommendations that we should really look at here, buy the P205 that you need today and make sure that you make it through spring and optimize for yield as much as you can. And as we look forward, our expectation is that summer fill programs will roll out sometime mid-June, maybe early July. And as we look at the international market, you've got a couple of pieces that happen in that time frame. The U.S. market is quiet with absence of demand. You have India that just starts to step in to buy and will need to step in aggressively by June or July. The Brazilians don't step in until July, August. So what we should have, if we're looking at that mid-June period, relatively tight inventories in India, I guess more than relatively, pretty tight inventories in India, and we've also got relatively tight inventories in Brazil, a U.S. market that for the most part is trying to end empty. We should see the market bottom out this summer with some sort of upside potential or flat market upside potential as we look at Q3 into Q4 and into U.S. fall season. Given India needs to step in aggressively, the Chinese will exit the market probably in early Q4, and Brazil will step in at about that same time frame. So as we look at fall fertilizer, when we get to the point where we feel comfortable that we've bottomed out and we see some upside, that's when we'll roll out with our summer fall buying expectation. My bias today is that's going to be sometime May or June is when we'll roll out that recommendation when we feel like this market really finds the floor. And the one piece that I'd really emphasize with that, we have a couple of programs, bin programs, if you wanted to buy and carry in store, as well as forward pricing. So you get the opportunity to participate in the summer fill low. There's a mild carry charge for ADM to store the product on your behalf. But what you should be able to do is buy the low and pick it up for fall consumption. So you don't need to have the outlay of the capital either for the bin or pay these high interest rates. We're able to carry that for you. As we look at downside issues on phosphates or potential, what we're really looking at is you know, backwardation in the grain market. We've got carry structure today. That isn't the overarching thesis, but that would be the piece that would make us wrong. And your ability to manage that risk really becomes you step in, you buy some phosphates and during summer fill, or you forward contract and you sell some grain against that to manage that exposure. But we think that spread should be fairly realistic as we get through summer fill. And that would be our overarching bias on really what we think this market structure is going to look like with a crystal ball here through the end of the year. Happy to answer any questions, get towards the end of the call, but that's all from me, Luke.
Thank you for that, Nick. Next, we're going to go to Noah Bishop, our ADM urea trader here. So, Noah?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Yeah, it's amazing a difference a month makes. When we talked last month, we noted that the global nitrogen market was softening due to waning demand and just a general improvement in supply from the issues that we saw in Q1. However, our view at that time was given the prospects of an early spring, very cooperative weather, we would not see global nitrogen values or discounted global nitrogen values impact the U.S. market until late April. We were wrong in that assessment as adverse weather across much of the North American market stagnated prompt urea demand. And it's allowed time for logistics to recoup in that way. We also saw a number of vessels discharge in NOLA right at the end of March, which coupled with this lack of demand due to adverse weather, caused prices to decline in NOLA. Interior pricing as a result has also seen some backwardation, but to a lesser extent, as logistics are still relatively constrained, especially in the interior off the Mississippi River that is more reliant on rail and truck logistics to move product. Our view moving forward is that we expect some stabilization in NOLA urea barges at current levels, as May barges are now trading at levels that net back a discount to importers compared to other demand points internationally where producers can send tons like Brazil. From a supply perspective, we see a fairly large April vessel lineup coming into the U.S. to supply the system. But when we look at this from a net supply situation, taking into the context the fact that we've seen some production issues and a tighter vessel lineup through Q1, we don't see the urea supply, net urea supply to the U.S. being overwhelming compared to the five-year average. And this we don't see as necessarily in an oversupply situation and probably approaching something more like balance. And given the current discount of the NOLA market compared to Brazil for the month of May, we see a relatively light vessel lineup for this time period, as importers would typically target their highest netback destination, which is not the U.S. today. Given these factors, we expect NOLA urea values in the Gulf to stabilize around current levels with the opportunity for some slight appreciation in the barge market as the international market finds some support nearby and as interior demand comes forward. Interior price levels will modulate depending on logistics capacity, as ultimately at this point we're essentially buying logistics, being April 17th. To date, it looks as though planting will commence within a relatively tight window across most of the market. You know, we've got rumblings of Illinois starting within probably a week of Western Canada, and we're going to see the whole trading region start to apply and take tons to ground within a relatively tight time frame. This compresses the demand across the whole geography to a tighter window. And when this happens, it typically causes strains on logistics systems. especially when we've been in this backwardated market and there's more just-in-time buyers that have been rewarded for not buying. As those just-in-time buyers come forth within a tight window right across North America, we expect some pressure both on the logistics system and some appreciation in basis levels, that being the spread that the interior price level is above the NOLA market. As a result, we recommend procuring spring pre-plant urea today. Obviously, buyer, if you're a buyer today and you haven't bought your spring pre-plant urea, you're probably seeing softer prices today than a month ago. We would suggest at this time covering that short, as we're very close to seeing the whole region run and some logistics issues as a result. Looking forward to Q3 summer fill pricing, that's still a bit of a moving target today. We still see some potential downside compared to the values where you could buy Q3 summer fill urea today. Typically, during that Q3 timeframe, the U.S. has to become a discount market as we don't need to attract tons during our off-season. And so at the moment, obviously, with some issues internationally around this Iranian-Israel conflict and subsequent fallout in or potential issues in the energy market, this sort of price level where we feel a bottom will be reached on summer fill is a bit of a moving target. And when we get to the point we feel comfortable prices have bottomed, we will issue that recommendation. The situation on UAN, turning to UAN, remains much the same as last time we spoke. Values have very slightly moderated as urea has softened, but to a much lesser extent. The supply situation remains really tight, and the import lineup for the month of April does not look to provide much reprieve like in urea. So our view in UAN is that this product should, on this product, you should continue to talk to your supplier about availability and likely step up to own your pre-plant needs today. If you need UAN in the deferred for top dress application, there may be an opportunity to buy slightly better as additional supply comes in. But this is very much time dependent and also geography dependent as liquid fertilizer logistics are typically tighter and less liquid than granular fertilizer logistics. So that's a general nitrogen update. I will be around at the end of the call to answer any questions.
Thank you, Noah. I guess I'm going to say in summary that if you've gone this far without locking in your fertilizer needs for this spring, what I'm hearing from Nick and Noah and even Chris, it's a great opportunity right now to get those needs covered in just to prevent any potential problems from logistical errors or issues and just making sure you've got the product, get your name on some. So with that, we will open it up to questions. To unmute yourself, it is *6, and then we'll do our conclusion here. So any questions, go ahead.
I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
So this lower urea prices, sounds like it's been kind of the perfect storm of slack demand with arrivals hitting NOLA. So, like, but can we think about this, like, if we look at corn acreage, 90 million acres of corn, like, are we, do we need to start thinking, like, you know, that's reality or maybe a little bit lower? How do you guys think about that with urea demand and what we can, I guess, try to start to extrapolate to corn acreage?
Yes, it's a good question. You know, when we look at there's essentially some data challenges when we look at supply versus demand disposition on urea in the United States and Canada. And one of the major issues that we have is that there's no real great data for approximating carryover inventory from one year to the next. And this always inserts some error, if you will, into the supply and demand disposition once we get into the heat of the battle in April and May. What we know is last year, we had very tight carryover inventory compared to the five-year average. And so although we see supply from an import plus production, sort of net supply in the U.S. and Canada year-to-date look relatively in line with the five-year average, sort of adding in that very tight carryout stock from last year, we expect this to be, you know, slightly tighter than normal and probably offsets the decrease in demand that may be incurred by slightly less corn acreage in the U.S. That coupled with the fact that now we've reduced prices on urea, say, you know, our upper Midwest price has come down probably $60, at least $50 in the last 4 weeks. We see a more comfortable affordability measure in terms of urea relative to crop commodity values. This should support demand from a demand elasticity point of view. And so, coupled with that, with the tight carryout stocks of last year, my view is that this should offset to a large degree the perhaps reduced corn acreage year over year. The only other factor to take into account in that is fall application of ammonia. Again, the data is a little bit sparse here in terms of how much fall ammonia went down, but we view that fall ammonia market as maybe a little bit larger this year, so that could offset some of the tighter supply situation on urea as from a carryout perspective. But then on the flip side, the UAN supply has been also tighter than usual as well, and with current price spreads on UAN to urea, it should push producers that can use either or towards urea consumption, and it should further bolster that urea demand.
Can I ask a quick question here? So looking at corn acreage, which was significantly lower than projected than what the industry thought, and carry out still high from last year's record crop, obviously trend line yield looks very achievable for 2024. What is going to be the impact of, again, another 178, 179 bushel per acre corn crop as we look at the NPK complex towards fall, knowing that cash corn will likely be somewhere in the $3.75 to $4 range, which is way below basically break even. It puts most producers at a significant loss for the year.
I think one of the things to keep in mind, it's a great question. I think what you're basically asking is if we continue to look at a relatively well supplied crop commodity environment, and prices continue to ease in that regard, does that have a meaningful impact on NPK prices in the deferred? Is that sort of the point of your question?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. You know, once we move out of the U.S. being in peak season on NPK, the price level internationally is really driven by other regions. Do we see a reduced demand situation, say, on nitrogen across the globe because crop commodity prices are off? Potentially, but it really depends on the region. The Brazilians, for instance, typically look at NPK affordability on a barter ratio sort of analysis, and that barter ratio year over year has actually improved as fertilizer prices have come off. This, in addition to the fact that planted acreage across much of the Latin American region is set to improve this year over year on corn. And other crop commodities as well. Generally, the view actually is that demand across Latin America, Brazil, Argentina on, say, nitrogen is actually set to improve. So from a demand side situation, I don't see demand being perhaps meaningfully reduced year on year. So then you sort of turn to the supply side of the equation when you look at urea, and that supply side of the equation is going to be set by, are we going to test marginal cost of production? That marginal cost of production would be like sort of Chinese levels. So global prices would only fall so far before you start turning off production, and that itself starts to balance the S&D. And then the other thing to obviously look at in terms of forward price guidance is some of the geopolitical turmoil, right? We like Chris talked about at the start of the call. That Arabian Gulf, Persian Gulf market produces about 20 million tons of urea in a year. It exports about 15 to 18 million tons. So it's about a quarter to one third of the tradable urea in the globe comes out of that Persian Gulf region. And if we were to see any sort of impact to navigating the Strait of Hormuz in terms of getting vessels out of that region, we'd have a major impact to supply. And we've not seen any issues to date, just to be clear, but there's definitely being some risk premium priced in the deferred. And I think so it's a bit of a complicated factor where you've sort of got supply and demand factors on both sides that are sort of setting this deferred price. And that's why I say Q3 pricing on, say, urea is a little bit of a moving target today. I don't know that it makes sense to try and make a buy or sell recommendation right this minute. Probably makes sense to let this play out for another month, see how the geopolitical turmoil plays out, and then issue a recommendation.
One kind of additional comment here alongside Noah's commentary that if you take a step back and look at kind of longer term trends on prices of fertilizers, ultimately, fertilizer pricing is the tail of the dog, not the dog. And your commodity crop prices are really going to drive the ultimate price level of fertilizers. So to the extent that we see backwardation in the grain markets, we will see price pressure on fertilizers as well as you know, affordability issues really kill demand. And if we have an inability to profitably grow crops, you kill the consumption side, the demand side of that S&D, forcing prices lower until we get to a point where we either hit marginal cost of production and we tighten up the supply side, or consumption picks back up at a price level that's profitable for the American and, I guess, international farmer.
There was a gentleman with a 402 area code, and you started to ask a question there earlier.
Yeah, you guys answered part of the question. The first part of my question was going to be, what does Q3, Q4 look like for fertilizer? And you just kind of answered it with what appears to be where the markets are driving on the grain markets. But when it comes to marketing, it's more of a marketing question. When you're looking at your 2025 crop, you know, considering where we're at today with the December futures price of $4.87 for corn on DEIS and 25 and November soybeans at $11.45, you know, what are your thoughts about marketing 25-30% of your crop if you kind of have your inputs where you kind of have an idea where they are, but the fertilizer is the one wild card? What would be your recommendation on forward contracting? Because the one thing I struggle with is, you know, 14-15, we lost a lot of working capital in those years because we were so focused on 14, we forgot about 15 and 14. But that's kind of where we're at today.
Yeah, it's certainly a popular question right now for anything 2025 or even into 2026, right? You know, typically it's, you know, if you can define your operational margin for 25, you know, 10 to 15% is probably a pretty comfortable area to start at. Now, the situation we're in with growing stocks, static demand for the whole demand, right? Domestic and international, you know, do you extend more? I think if you have comfort on operational margin and you have a not certainty, right, on the fertilizer piece, but a higher degree of comfort maybe you've had the last couple of years, I think that 25 to 30% that you feel that defends operational margin is prudent. I do believe that we're probably in year two, assuming normal production, we're in year two, probably a 4 to 5 year downward cycle. The market that has broken into carries, less so on beans relative to corn, right, to be able to lock in that forward carry when those carries present themselves. So as we move through 24, and balance sheets continue to stay comfortable or get more comfortable, you know, we're going to be insulated a little bit on those deferreds to be able to enable, you know, additional marketing strategies to unfold. But I do think if you can get, you know, any degree of definition or comfort around inputs to defend operational margin, I think right now the name of the game is prudency and defending that operational margin. For 25, I think 26 becomes a little bit, I don't know that I go 25-30% out into 26, because then at that point, we're probably getting into the middle or later innings of the current cycle that we're in.
I would agree on the 26. I'd like to think maybe 5-10% would be good there just to get a mark out there. And if you have the worst market, it's not a bad place to be.
Well, our 402, it's a great concept. And it's for those longtime listeners, it's been a concept that we've talked about quite a bit, pairing your basically your grain sales against your forward fertilizer purchasing. And I think that's one of the unique propositions that my many of you partner with ADM is because you do have an interest in selling some of that forward grain to de-risk some of the uncertainty we have coming at us. And one tool that we've got at our disposal is that forward pricing concept. So caller 402, if that's something that, hey, you want to sell some of that forward grain and lock in some of that forward pricing, that is an avenue to manage some of that risk on a portion of your business. And one thing that we'd want to take a look at regarding the farming economics to see if that makes sense. So in the event you do want to start laying off some of that risk, selling some even further out forward grain, we'd be happy to entertain that concept with you. Because again, that's one of the pillars that we do believe in with our model, that you've got the ability to help manage your risk by selling the forward grain, locking in your inputs in the forward markets that, frankly, a lot of
a lot of our peers in the industry just don't offer that tool. So it's a great concept, and I appreciate you bringing it to light.
Any other questions?
I would be curious about any comments regarding the confidence in that 90 million acre corn number, given the large number of unaccounted for acres and the short-term risk going forward in that number growing.
Yeah, so I think generally that 90 million acre number we saw now almost 3 weeks ago, the trade is probably trading a little bit larger number. I think the trade's probably still closer to a 91 million acreage number on the perception of the market right now. I think so much is going to depend on how we, you know, these next couple weeks of weather, right? If we are able to get a wind, it's probably going to lean towards more corn acreage from, I guess, a historical perspective, with just the ease of putting a crop in. Certainly six and a half million acreage of, I guess, disappearance versus last year's has a lot of people still scratching their heads. Prevent plant, how much marginal ground are we going to see knocked out? And do we have any sort of a spring weather issue that was going to lend towards higher prevent plant? My personal thoughts is that we still see above 90 million acres. A lot of break evens I'm hearing, we're probably near those levels. But I think there's probably still some operational margin that can be had should we see a rally back near $5 on these corn. But still, the total acreage mix of a down 6 million, you know, still largely has to be reconciled once we get to that final June planting number.
On the fertilizer consumption side of that, the piece that we're paying very close attention to was the really heavy fall applied ammonia alongside heavy P and K applications. And when you see and this is one of the largest fall applied ammonia years we've seen. And what that really does is kind of lock in a large number of acres to really plant corn and alongside the grain trade, making it a little bit higher, 90 million acre crop. We're seeing on the consumption side out of ammonia that it should bode reasonably well to, up slightly larger corn acreage mix than really I think we would have bet on 6 months ago.
So given those comments, what's the magnitude of the risk? I mean, it just central Iowa looked heavy, a lot heavier corn than what those numbers would suggest. I'm just, it seems like there's substantial risk in that terms of the potential to increase that acreage number to a level that would heavily impact price.
Yes, I can take that one. So I think if we leave demand static and we take 92 million acres of corn, I'm just going to call yield a 176. You're a 2.4 carryout. You're a 17% stocks to use for the U.S. You know, it's comfortable. It's on the heavier side. I don't know. I think it probably tells us these corns got to go back into that break the lows of prompt month where we traded down to 396. But I don't know. I think you're probably 15 cents lower than that. The 14.5 billion bushel demand base, it's a strong demand base. So I don't think you're a 350. I think that you're probably a 375 to 450 market. I think we probably raised our floors versus, I guess, the last bear cycle we've had. But it certainly would tell you that we've got to go take out the lows we saw back in February. But probably 15, 20 cents lower than that if a 92 million acre number comes to fruition. I think you get psychology of the market. If you get north of a 2.5 carry out, then I think you probably shift into another paradigm, and maybe, you know, then that lends to lower prices from there.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, folks, for your questions. With that, we've reached our time. That wraps up our ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer Report for April 2024. Our plan right now with planting coming is to skip May, so we'll have an update coming for a June date. Look forward to that. Until then, if you'd like to learn more about ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer, bin programs, storage options, go to fertilizer.admadvantage.com. or reach out to your local representative. Thank you for your time, and thanks for listening, and have a great, safe planting season.